You're tuned in to the Dr. Jess Show, where we shine a spotlight on your health and well-being. Come along as we explore the realm of holistic health, wellness, and personal transformation. Now it's time to meet your mentor, your compassionate guide, Dr. Jessica Papa. We're firm believers that health is not just the absence of illness, it's a state of thriving. And together, we'll uncover the secrets to achieving that thriving state. We'll bring you expert interviews, personal stories of transformation, and practical advice that you can apply to your life right now. So, whether you're on the quest for optimal physical health, seeking to nurture your mental and emotional well-being, looking for mentorship, or simply looking for a daily dose of motivation, the Dr. Jess Show has got you covered. So, get ready to be inspired, educated, and empowered. It's time to take control of your health and well-being. Join us on this incredible journey towards a happier, healthier you. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast to stay updated with the latest episodes. And now, without any further ado, let's dive into today's topic on the Dr. Jess Show. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Dr. Jess Show Pelvic Health Podcast. I am excited today to chat with one of our newest speakers here, Sherry Palm, who is the founder and CEO of APOPS. That is the Association for Pelvic Organ Prolapse Support. Sherry's recently released her fourth book, oh my goodness, four books about pelvic organ prolapse, the biggest secret in women's health. Stigma, Indifference, Outrage, and Optimism follows her prior award-winning book, Pelvic Organ Prolapse, The Silent Epidemic, which we're going to talk to her about today. Cher is a pelvic organ prolapse patient advocate, vaginal and intimate health activist, internationally recognized speaker, a pelvic organ prolapse key opinion leader, and prolific writer regarding pelvic organ prolapse, not only physical, but emotional, social, sexual, fitness, and employment quality of life that it impacts. So welcome, Sherry.
Hi, Jess. It's so nice to connect with you today
and share information with your following.
Yeah, so excited to have you on. We've chatted before, and this is going to be such an important podcast for the folks listening and sharing, because not enough is done, in my opinion. There's not enough awareness, public awareness about pelvic organ prolapse. And I think that it leads to just underreporting in the research and just delayed medical attention for women. So I'm stoked to have this open conversation with you about women's health. It's crucial to really destigmatize this condition and promote a more timely diagnosis and treatment. Because as a pelvic PT specialist, we see this often, and a lot of times we see it later on in different stages of prolapse, which we'll get into the different stages. But when we talk in dialogue with our patients, they say that their doctors, had talked to them a little bit about it, but just said, oh yeah, that's normal. Everybody gets this at some point. It's fine. You're good to go. And at that stage really is when there could be so much more to be addressed to prevent, the later stages of 3 and 4 and then, surgery. So,
absolutely.
Yeah,
it's important that there is a standardized screening during routine pelvic examinations for
pelvic organ prolapse.
That's a huge shortfall in that. Kind of sets the whole cascade happening. When say all the time in our patient support forum, they ask, why wasn't I informed of or screened for pelvic organ prolapse sooner? We hear it over and over and over again. And that's the reality. Women find out after the fact. All too often, it's not until in the menopausal years, because that's the second leading cause of pelvic organ prolapse. And they may have had some symptoms earlier on, and they just assume that's just what comes from having babies, and that's just part of life, and they don't explore, the reasons why. It's the train wreck out there right now.
It really is, and I'll tell you what, and for everyone listening, I mean, as a pelvic floor therapist and a recent recently postpartum, I have a 6-month-old and a 2-year-old, but with my recent 6-week checkup with my OB after having my latest baby, I had to guide my OB into appropriately checking and testing for pelvic organ prolapse. So It was unnerving for me, but it was eye-opening. And it was just, you know, for every patient that's told me, you know, my OB didn't even check for that. And they are sort of learning it for the first time here in the clinic about the different organs that can descend and what does that mean and how do you tell and the symptoms that they have and whatnot. So and not everybody OB, not all OBs are that way, but
yeah. But by and large, that is definitely they just don't know about this. Yeah, they don't know when, and it's right. It's awesome for your Abgain that she has you to teach her. I mean, that's priceless. They get the information from. But the reality is our baseline diagnostic practitioners, and it's not just the OBGYNs. I mean, it's gynecology in general. It's midwives. It's the urologists and midwives. I mean, the whole spectrum of providers of pelvic examinations have a shortfall in this area. I mean, I don't understand. It makes me crazy every day. It's like a no-brainer to those of us that are in the arena, obviously. But
I can't express
how often I've had different medical practitioners come into our forum, our patient support forum, and say that they did not receive any curriculum.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's just,
so let's back up for a second, Cher, because I really just want to know, like, what made you want to do this heart and soul work that you do? Tell us a little bit more about that, and then we'll kind of get into defining what pelvic organ prolapse is for those listening. But really, tell us first, like, why this focus, why this, you know, topic, why this specialty?
Okay, well, it's kind of a typical story of life throws you, you know, a curveball, and you either catch it or you'll get hit in the face. One of the two. I was diagnosed with pelvic organ prolapse in my mid-50s. But if we go back prior to that, I was diagnosed at 30 with multiple sclerosis. Wheelchair bound, okay. Short time frame was the prognosis. And I didn't find that acceptable. And it took me about 3 years to get my body figured out and to find balance for myself. But I did. And from that point forward, I was extremely proactive regarding my health. I made sure I had all of my wellness exams done on schedule, and I paid attention to my body sensations and so on. And so as life moved forward, you know, when we all have issues, health issues here and there that pop up, and you deal with them and then you move on. My best friend at that point in time was my primary care practitioner. And we would go out for dinner and you know, drinks, and we would talk health all the time. It was just a natural flow for us. And once I got into my mid-50s, I've always worked a 60-hour week. That's my norm. And for about 3 months, I had noticed when I would go into the bathroom to urinate that when I would wipe, I would feel a lump. And finally, after 3 months of that, I mean, my typical is a woman's typical. You know, you're working. You run in the bathroom, you drop trowel, you pee, you wipe, you wash your hands, you get back to work. And there's no thought process, you know? And so when I finally got curious that one day, and I don't know what sparked me that day more than the other 3 months of it happening, but I thought, what the heck is that? And I got the handheld mirror out and I put it between my legs and noticed this walnut size lump coming out of my vagina. And of course I thought, well, that looks like a tumor. Can't be good. So I emailed my practitioner buddy, and she said, come on over, we'll do a pelvic examination. And upon examination, she very matter-of-factly said, you have pelvic organ prolapse. I will fit you with a pessary. If you don't like the pessary, I will refer you to a good urogynecologist, and you can have surgery. I was clueless what she was talking about. I had never heard of any of those terms before. I was just completely deer in the headlights. I didn't know what she was talking about. So she fit me with a pessary. And pessary fittings are kind of tricky. They're not the easiest thing to be successful at the first crack. And for those listeners who don't know what a pessary is, which would probably be most of the listeners, I'm guessing, right. It is a synthetic device that is inserted into the vagina to support your organs, which is taking the place of your pelvic floor muscles, which used to support your organs, but no longer do it effectively. So she fit me with the pessary, and I went home. And I did what everyone else would do. I just hit Dr. Google. I need information. You know, what's the scoop here?
Dr. Google.
Yeah, exactly. Thank goodness for Dr. Google. So found out that this condition was extremely common. And at that point in time, it was the stat that was used for prevalence was 3.3 million women in the U.S. There was no global data. It was just U.S. data. It was all I could find. So we're going back to 2007 now. So I was furious. I thought, if 3.3 million women have this condition, how is it possible when I've been so proactive with my health that I've never heard of it? It made no sense to me whatsoever. So I went down that rabbit hole and I spent the next couple of weeks digging into pelvic organ prolapse and looking for research and looking for articles. And there wasn't tons out there back in 2007. But I did find information. And I knew within that 2 week period, at the end of that 2 week period, you know, my gut said, this is where you're supposed to be. This is your space. And I thought, I know, I'll write a book and I'll get the information into the hands of all women and we'll change women's health forever. What a moron. I was clueless what was involved with what I was digging into. So I started working on my first book. And in this time frame, using the pessary, which worked really well for me, and I adapted to inserting and removing the pessary relatively quickly. I had a couple of the typical mishaps with it. You know, you go to put it in, and it's because you fold it in half when you insert a pessary for the typical ring type, it can spring out of your fingers and go flying in the toilet bowl if you're not really paying attention to what you're doing. So you'll be like everything else in life. You learn as you go. But it worked relatively well in general. So I recognized, however, after a few weeks of this, that I don't have time to do this every day. My typical morning was get up, let the dogs out to pee, go pee myself, let the dogs back in, feed the dogs, exercise, catch up on my email, jump in the shower, throw a little face and hair trick on my head, and then get on with my day.
Yeah. And so with time management, did you just a quick question that has come up here in the clinic with pessaries and fittings? Does it matter what grade you're at, in your opinion, to find comfort with the pessary? I know they're all different shapes and sizes, but what has been your experience with that? Cher, did we lose you? Cher, are you there? Cher? Oh, we might have to come back to this in just a minute. Cher, are you still with us?
Hello.
Cher, hi.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hello. And now we can hear you. There was a bit of a pause for a minute, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. We'll get back into it. We were talking about pessaries, and I was asking you if, in your experience and background with all the research that you've looked at, pessary fittings, is there a sort of difference in terms of comfort level with certain pessaries, and does grade matter in terms of the pelvic organ prolapse grade to make it a more comfortable fitting?
Okay. So the thing with pessaries is, well, obviously every woman is unique on the inside like we are on the outside. And so pessary fittings are difficult for some women, not for all women, but for some women. And certainly there's an insufficient amount of education provided to those that fit pessaries. But the bottom line is if you have the right type of pessary and the right size of pessary, in general, women have pretty good success with them. And it's not so much if you're in a grade four, for example, or grade three of severity of prolapse, and that's considering that there are four grades of severity, and one's the mildest and four is the most severe. if you're in even a grade three, you can have great success with a pessary if it is the right type and the right size for your body. And comfort wise, if it's the right type and the right size, they're usually pretty, you know, it's like you don't even know they're, it's like context. You don't even know they're there. You insert them and then you don't even feel them. And then you remove them at the end of the day, or else you have your practitioner remove them monthly. So in general, pessaries, like you've mentioned, there are like some 20 something different types of pessaries, shapes and so on. And now they're even working on customized pessaries, 3D customized pessaries. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's not, obviously it's going to take a while to get that through, be covered by Medicare or whatever, you know, but it's an option that's really hugely, not just up and coming. It's actually being, sold in Canada, I believe, at this point. So, so pessaries in general we find that women typically use pessaries for about 2 years. And at that point, they're tired of fussing with them and they opt for surgery. That's what we usually see. Throughout the 2 years, though, they don't typically have a lot of problem if it's the right type and size. Those that are not the right type and size can cause a lot of issues, a lot of discomfort. And if they're too large, they're uncomfortable and they cause erosions. If they're too small, they pop out. Mm-hmm. And so women get pretty frustrated with that. And when you've gone to someone who doesn't really know well how to fit a pessary and they're on their fifth different type or size of pessary, you get frustrated and you walk away. So that's a whole kind of bucket of soup all by itself, pessaries are. So
I have a particular patient that comes to mind who wanted me to ask you this question about her pessary in terms of best practice of how to insert it, in terms of what position should she be standing, should be laying down, should she be laying down with knees bent? Is there a best sort of position to be in?
And that's going to vary by woman. It's pretty much your own personal choice. And they recommend that you lift one foot up onto like a stool so that you're somewhat separating issues.
You could do it laying down.
Obviously you couldn't do it sitting, but I think the most optimal position to be in is standing position. That's what probably is the easiest to do it in. So that's what I did, and that's what I pretty much did. That's what they did too.
And for everybody listening, again, pelvic organ prolapse, what it is it's when one or more of the organs in the pelvis basically slips down from its normal position. There are different grades of organs. Obviously, we're talking about the bladder, your bowels, uterus, and rectum. The feelings vary from person to person, but it could be a feeling of pressure or fullness in the pelvic bowl. It could be backache, slow in your lower back, painful intercourse, or just a feeling that something is falling out of your vagina. Urinary problems like leaking, or chronic, you know, sort of sensation or urge to urinate. Constipation is another one, or loss of bowel control. And then even spotting or bleeding from the vagina can be correlated to prolapse. And there are different sort of ways to diagnose and different terms that you might hear or see. And those are related to the organ. So like rectocele is a rectum prolapse, and enterocele is a small bowel prolapse. There's a vaginal prolapse, which is a prolapse of the vagina, a uterine prolapse, of course, for the uterus. And then there's even one, a prolapse of the urethra, which is the tube that carries the urine. That's the urethrocele. And then a cystocele, which is a prolapse of the bladder into the vagina, which is a very common one that we see here and common in general.
It would never occur to women that this would happen. It happened to me, and it didn't even occur to me that it meant anything. Tampons can push out because of this displacement of your organs. If you always were able to keep a tampon in, and all of a sudden you can't keep a tampon in anymore, that's because your organs are pushing that tampon out. They're displaced from the normal position, and tampon's got to go someplace to make room for those organs. So that's a symptom that you don't see real often in articles or studies, but it is part and parcel of prolapse.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely be adding that into my intake questionnaire. I like that. That's something that I didn't even think about. Just to give everybody too an idea of the prevalence of prolapse, studies estimate that up to 50% of women may experience some degree of pelvic organ prolapse during their lifetime, which just is so huge to me. And some of the factors that make it more prevalent can increase with age, but it is more common in women who have given birth, especially multiple times. And so it's also women who've undergone vaginal childbirth, they're at a higher risk of developing pelvic organ prolapse. And that can increase with age, especially after menopause, with hormonal changes that can contribute to the tissue and muscle weakening. Can you chat with us a little bit about surgical, sort of like that whole standpoint of intervention? I know that sometimes people think that is a first resort. For me, it's always, you know, sharing with the patient, that's like a last resort. There's a lot of things that can be done before even considering surgery, but the fact that surgery doesn't always create a long-term fix for it. Can we chat a little bit about that?
Absolutely. That's a very significant layer to address. First of all, we feel it's really important for women to, one of the values of having a pessary or utilizing other types of non-surgical treatments is it gives you a chance to really understand your body. We're taught from little on, you know, that hole below the belt zone is like the no man's zone. We don't go down there. We don't think about it. We don't talk about it. And so we're not really cognizant of what's beyond sexual sensation. I mean, we don't know what a urinate is, obviously, and defecate and so on. We're involved with the pelvic floor. And so having a period of time, and ideally, like I said, we see 2 years as a pretty much common period of time before women opt for surgery. They either want it yesterday, that was me, wanted it yesterday, or they wait about 2 years and experiment with alternatives.
Right.
That you can learn about your body, understand your body better, which is of value to you post-surgery if you have surgery. If you understand that, okay, if I'm carrying around my 40-pound for an hour, I feel that heaviness in my pelvic floor. You might not recognize that before you've gone through non-surgical treatment options for prolapse. So those little tidbits, lifestyle tidbits can be beneficial. So moving into surgery is something you need to think seriously about. It's critical that women explore your gynecology effectively. In any field of practice, there's the good and the bad. And it's no different with doctors than it is with people that roof houses, you know. You have to do your homework and you have to dig into the backdrop of your urogynecologist. And if you love your PT gynecologist, that's a really good indicator that that's a direction to go. So finding the right practitioner is a big deal. Understanding what surgery involves. There's a bunch of different types of surgery that are available. Native tissue repair, which is using your... There's mesh repair, which remains highly anxiety-provoking for many, many women because of what happened with mesh back in the 2008 to 2013 time slot, when mesh companies were selling and promoting mesh products to gynecologists who do not have the extra 2 to 3 years of training in the pelvic floor area that your gynecologists have got, and a lot of complications occurred. So mesh is a valuable tool in the right hands for the right patient, but this is a staging process. First of all, go through your non-surgicals first, and we highly, highly, highly recommend seeing a physical therapist. They're so in tune with that pelvic floor. They know multiple different types of non-surgical treatments you can utilize. They teach you how to understand sensations. So they're
Sherry, are you still there? Cher? Cher? Let's give her another minute to see if she's still on. We're having a little bit of a connection issue. Share.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, we lost you again. There we go.
It's got to be stuff coming through on my phone. Yeah. Okay.
Don't worry about it. So we were chatting about pelvic floor physical therapy. And so for anybody, again, that's new to what that is, it's a very specialized field of physical therapy that really sort of addresses the pelvic floor. Pelvic organ prolapse is something that we treat here all the time. And it's definitely something that can be addressed and sort of, I don't want to say prevent long-term in terms of, you know, you'll never get a prolapse because it's so activity, you know, dependent and, you know, prior history, it plays a factor as well, but it's something that can really be, you know, enhanced and the symptoms controlled and, you know, supported. So not only do we address the pelvic floor, a lot of times people think about strength. Strength is the biggest thing. They think that it's a weakness issue, but more often than not, it's a tissue restriction issue. And sometimes the tissues become a little bit too tight and holding patterns can happen there for different reasons. So sometimes it's about relaxing the pelvic floor muscles so that they can put less pressure downward on the organs so that eventually that pressure system lifts and we can help sort of bring up the prolapsed organs a little bit more naturally. It's a whole, you know, multidisciplinary approach as well. I mean, tissues, muscles, we're taking pressure off nerves and putting really a tailored treatment program, if you will, and a treatment plan based on the severity of the prolapse and the person's individual symptoms and their overall health and goals. And I'll just share, too, that a lot of folks come with us who come here to us are, like you said, Dr. Google, that's their first sort of reference, and doing Kegels, and they're trying to, like, you know, do something to help, and maybe they've been told to do Kegels by someone else, but it's usually the worst thing that you can do right away before having an actual individualized pelvic floor head-to-toe assessment, because again, oftentimes the tissue is just a little bit too tight, and Kegels, you don't want to strengthen something that's already dysfunctional. You want to release that tension and then create stabilization there.
And we do that. I absolutely 100% agree with all of that, Jess. We have a significant number of women that come into our space that have a tight pelvic floor. And everyone assumes, you know, that, okay, so if you've done your Googling and you see Kegel, 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 and you think, okay, magic secret sauce here, I'll just Kegel. And not only do they have a tight pelvic floor to start with, but they also are not doing the Kegels the right way. So it's like a double whammy.
Exactly.
So having that function is pivotal.
And even just simple things, like we actually had a patient today that said this, that she was power peeing her whole life because she prided herself on being able to go to the bathroom and like under a minute be done in and out. And it was like this force, right? It's just, and to me, that's like, oh my gosh, that's the absolute do. And just, you know, you should be able to sit on the toilet and just relax all those pelvic floor muscles, just let your urine come out naturally without forcing it out. And so there are things that I hear, you know, sometimes cringeworthy as a therapist, but that people just don't know. A lot of times too, it's like holding urine in longer than you should. And that can kind of create urgency and putting more pressure and then eventually, you know, then can shrink the bladder. And all these things can add up creating inflammation in the pelvic tissues, which can factor into a prolapse. I want to chat too a little bit on just kind of like the impact this has on a woman in terms of her mental health, also just like socially and all those factors, because that plays a big part in what I hear in terms of people's goals and long-term. It really comes back to how they feel. when they're even thinking about what their day is going to look like, where they have to go. Long term, I read a statistic recently that incontinence is one of the number one nursing home admittance diagnoses, and with that is a degree of prolapse as well. So let's chat about that and talk to me, I guess, about sort of like the emotional factor.
Yeah, that the quality of life measures impact women physically, emotionally, socially, sexually, in fitness and employment sectors.
Can you say that one more time for us?
Sure. It's the impact, those quality of life impacts are physical, emotional, social, sexual, fitness, and employment. And few think about the employment factor. But they're all, it's basically all day, every day, how prolapse impacts your world. And women are, in general, when they're first diagnosed, they are devastated. I actually have a slide I built. This was years ago. I had asked the women in our patient following to tell me in one word how pelvic organ prolapse makes them feel. And they came out of the woodwork. I was deluged with single one-word posts. And it took me like 3 hours to sift through them to get rid of the duplicates in there. I made a slide out of it. And the negative, obviously they're all negative words, but it broke my heart to read what they had to say. I mean, their whole self-image was totally destroyed. Their self-esteem was totally destroyed. They did not want to engage in sex with their partners because they were so worried that their partner would see the prolapse. On the physical side, obviously, you already talked about some of those physical manifestations, and it can impact women in multiple different ways physically. When we're looking at the social aspect, and you're spot on with the whole nursing home admits and the incontinence ties to that, women that have got incontinence, I mean, it's joked about, you know, it's just slap a pad on it, get on with your day. Well, it's not that simple. That's how you make you, it makes you feel on the inside.
Right.
Women are devastated. And if we're talking fecal incontinence, you can multiply that by 10. So looking at this through each individual sector, we see those ramifications from each of those different sectors, depending on what the woman's story is that she is sharing or what questions she's asking. But in general, women, by and large, it's the self-esteem is the big pivot point. That's the hub of the wagon wheel. So all of these layers come back to haunt them in how they feel about themselves. They don't feel feminine. They don't feel attractive. They feel dirty. And that just haunts you. It just haunts you. So the value of women talking to women about their, and that's what happens in our closed support spaces, is it's women talking to women. I just steer the ship. The women do all the heavy lifting in there. They come in, they tire kick, they post their stories, they ask their questions. And the other women come out of their closet and say, well, this is what I did. This is what happened to me. And they're all sharing one-on-one, and that helps relieve that anxiety that women always think it's just them because no one talks about pelvic organ prolapse.
No,
it's horrible.
It's so common affecting many women. I mean, it doesn't have to be the new normal, but it is so common. I think that, again, not to kind of go off on a tangent here, but in every other country practically besides ours, women are prescribed pelvic floor PT right away postpartum. Everybody receives it. It's covered also. And they're, you know, right away, they're starting to kind of repair the organs, repair the tissues, and get back to a new stable base instead of people like now baby boomer age range that we see in geriatrics that they're finding this information out way late in the game. And just that, you know, mental health professionals, OBs, OB-GYNs, counselors, like we all kind of need to be proactive for our patients and set a new standard of care, because we're in the position to empower through our knowledge. But if we're not educating about it, then, you know, we're not going to progress. So, you know,
missing the margin. This is a real hot button item for me too. And I really do believe that not only do I believe that it should be a standard of care, it has to be addressed at the government level. It has to be addressed. This is how insurance changes coverage. You're talking Medicare. Mm-hmm. And so I've got no doubt in my mind that as much as I hate getting involved in politics, I'll be on the Hill one day and say, okay, this is what we have to do. This is why we have to do it.
Yes.
It has to be changed. It has to be addressed. So, and now the White House has got that Women's Health Initiative going, and like, it's a perfect time, but getting through the layers is, oh my gosh, it's a nightmare. But it's so pivotal for this. It's like childbirth is cause number one of pelvic organ prolapse. Menopause is cause number two. And there's a multitude of lifestyle, behavioral, and coexisting conditions that also stimulate prolapse issues. So why isn't this being addressed already? Why? It makes no sense. So we'll get there. It's just going to take another 5 to 10 years probably.
And what I see as well is our younger demographic of women here that we treat who are prenatal, thinking about, having kids, they want to get body ready. They're so much more focused on their body and their health, and they're taking action because a lot of them reveal that, hey, my cousin, my aunt, my mom, my grandmother leaks when she sneezes or jumps, or she has this prolapse issue and she suffers in silence with it. I don't want to be like that. And then we have our baby boomer aged patient, and they're, whispering their symptoms to us. And, they're like, no, this is my last resort. I've dealt with it for so long. My kids are grown now. I can focus on me. So they're finally addressing it at this point. And hey, it's better late than never. But it's nice to see the younger demographic doing something more proactive, which is great. So, Sherry, you still there? Sherry? Oh boy, we are having some connection issues today. Let's give her another minute to see if she can get back on here. Sherry? Let's give her another 10 seconds or so. Cher? Hello? Sherry? All right, we're going to... Okay, there we go.
Oh, this is so frustrating. Okay, so... okay, now I'm lost again. I don't know where we were.
That's okay. So we were just kind of... basically kind of going over, I was sharing demographics of our younger aged patients with prolapse and how they're just much more ready to do something early in this early stages of pelvic health versus when they're, aunts and moms and grandmothers in the game.
Right. So and this is their, that the young blood are so comfortable with vocalizing their concerns. That's priceless when it comes to a stigmatized condition like this. They're out there, they talk about stuff, and I'm so hopeful that as this becomes a little bit more mainstream, that those young blood will be the catalyst that's going to change everything. All women need to know this stuff. They all need to talk about this stuff comfortably. It's health.
Yeah.
Pelvic organ prolapse is simply health. That's it.
So, Cher, what role does the POP Association play in supporting patients and raising awareness?
APOPS, well, our core is obviously lifting the awareness of this condition. The support and guidance is part of the structure, but we are the hub of the wagon wheel. So we intersect with patients. That's our top layer, our most significant layer. But also practitioners like yourselves and urogynecologists and we haven't connected strongly with the gynecology sector yet. We have gynecologists that engage in our stuff, but it's not to the degree it needs to be to stimulate change. But also research, we're heavily intersecting with research. They approach us all the time with their surveys and their questions for their studies that they're building. Academia, because we have got to do a better job of teaching everyone who is involved with vaginal health, the basics of prolapse. And obviously industry is part of the puzzle too, because they're the ones that design and develop new treatments for patients. And then of course there's the policy side of the sector. So that going on the Hill stuff and making actual changes to the structure for what's covered and not covered in Medicare and insurance. Medicare always comes first and then insurance follows suit after Medicare establishes their rules. So it's kind of, our hub is always going to be about supporting patients, awareness and support. That's our big bops. But if we're not pulling all those other layers into the big picture, we're not engendering change. And we need to stimulate change because the system is messed up right now, messed up. So we take each layer as it comes to us. And I kind of, because you're juggling multiple balls at the same time, I kind of let the energy out there send me the ball I'm supposed to catch. Right. That's what we focus on that particular day. So and getting the information out there with the tools that we have, whether I write a lot of articles, 100 YouTube videos, and they're mostly shorter videos. The majority of them are under 2 minutes. And podcasts like you've done here, that's all information for patients to have. We've got an extensive POP info drop-down menu on APOP's website, which has got tons of information on it. The books I've written are very patient-centric. But this last one that I wrote, the intent was to educate practitioners as well as patients because of that shortfall in practitioner curriculum. So we're in the process right now of organizing our first expo, 2-day Women's Pelvic Health Expo. WEN is one of our programs. It stands for Women's Health Empowerment Network. And that there's different layers and tiers to that program. And so this expo that that we're developing is one of those arms. So excuse me one second here. So we look at this in many, many different angles so that we can kind of cover it from every direction that we possibly can to get a bigger bang. All Absolutely. Women need to know about this condition. They do.
Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. And if you are listening in and experiencing symptoms of pelvic organ prolapse or want to take proactive steps for pelvic health, please consult with a healthcare professional and really consider a pelvic floor PT. That can be instrumental. It's just personalized and an empowering approach to really address your unique pelvic floor dysfunction and really just to help improve the quality of your life. You know, if you are being, you know, affected by this condition, it's something that can be treated safely and proactively, really. It's open communication, you know, with your support, healthcare support team is huge. Don't suffer in silence. Really know that you're not alone. There are so many women that we see here, again, in the little state of Rhode Island with pelvic organ prolapse, let alone in the world. And books like Sherry's are so easy to read. It's chock full of information. I've just finished reading your third edition to your book, The Silent Epidemic, Pelvic Organ Prolapse, which you can get right on Amazon. Can you share for everybody again the ways that they can find your information? I know you mentioned the Facebook page has a lot of research, links and articles, your books on Amazon.
Yes, absolutely. If you Google my name, Sherry Palm, Sherrie, Palm, you probably all of my stuff's going to come up. I'm on all the social media. Well, not all. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on APOPS has got two Facebook pages. There's the closed patient forum, which you can find access to that through APOPS website. There's a special page that I believe it's a patient support form is what the title of the page is. And if you go into there and you read that page, it will tell you how to request entry into the forum. You have to go through a process. We keep it, we screen pretty aggressively to keep it clean and running smoothly and so on. And the only men that are allowed in there are practitioners.
Okay. Physician. That's good to know.
So that's one thing to check out. I've got, there's an open APOPS page. I post social media comments Monday through Friday. Sometimes it's a link to an article. Sometimes it's just personal observations.
Wow, that's phenomenal. And that's on the website or your book?
Yeah, that I post that, the social media posts on all of, there's a book Facebook page, there's the APOPS open page, there's the APOPS closed forum, and I also have my personal Facebook page. But also I'm on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and Instagram.
So and we're going to include all of these links in the show notes for everybody listening, just so they'll have easy access to you and your expertise and experiences. Sherry, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Is there anything that you think we left unsaid?
I think you covered it pretty well. I just would like to reiterate to women to make sure when you're scouting out a physical therapist, you're looking for a women's health physical therapist. And just, you didn't mention that, but I just want to reiterate that because that's important. These are the experts in women's pelvic floor health, the experts. And going to a regular physical therapist is not the same thing. You need a women's health PT.
Absolutely.
And then also, I'd like to encourage women to know that if you're experiencing any of the symptoms that Jess mentioned, you're not alone. Again, 50% of women experience pelvic organ prolapse. It's just not talked about openly, something that we're trying very, very hard to change. Once you've been diagnosed with it, share that information with your mother, your sister, your daughter. Spread the word, woman to woman. This is how we change systems. This is grassroots.
Raise awareness, literally early detection, a comprehensive approach to manage. It can really improve, significantly improve the quality of the prolapse. So let's really, like Cher said, break the silence, encourage, you know, open dialogue, share with your friends, sisters, mothers around, you know, in women's health. This is something that needs to be talked about. So don't be bashful. Talk about your pelvic floor experiences and again, it's not something to be embarrassed about at all. You're not alone. So thank you.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Thank you again, Cher. And
thank you for the opportunity to share information, and I truly appreciate it. And good luck to all of your listeners, and I hope that they find the answers that they need. And I've got no doubt that when they come to you, you're going to help them on their way.
Yes, we will. Absolutely. All right, everybody, stay tuned for the next episode of the Dr. Jess Show, where we're going to be interviewing Genevieve Holland, who wrote Mama Natural book. So stay tuned for that. Bye for now.